Hello, everybody, and welcome to the third Big Planet Comics podcast. I'm here with Jared and Nick. My name's Kevin. Say hi, you guys.
Hello. How's it going?
Hi, everybody? You guys.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Excitement.
So that was our new theme song composed by me for a cartoon I was going to make, but I am lazy, so I never finished it. So now we're using it for the podcast.
Good job.
Thanks. Well, yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. I just wanted to let everybody know that you can now subscribe to the Big Planet Comics podcast on iTunes.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, so that's good. You guys should do that.
But if you do, don't forget to download the old ones, too.
Yeah, you can do that. Give us 5 stars. Yes. Give us 10 stars. If you have more than one computer, give us, like, 40 stars.
And write reviews.
Yeah, write reviews.
About us.
We want to be super famous. So let's get right into it. We're going to go with the news. So our first news item is Gorillaz 2. Hey, Jared, why don't you explain to people what Gorillaz is?
Gorillaz was a project that is one of the books that came out from Image 2 years ago, or maybe even 3 years at this point.
I think that's about right, yeah.
And he did 4 issues. He was expecting to do really well with it, and since it was a very small Image book, it basically ran out of money very quickly. So, but it's great. It's a Vietnam comic where a crazy scientist is training chimpanzees to be like urban, or not urban, but like real jungle fighters to fight the Viet Cong, so they're running around with cigarettes and machine guns.
Yeah, it's like Deer Hunter with chimps.
Yes.
So, like you said, Gorillaz 1 was awesome, but it didn't really sell a lot of copies. So basically, he's trying to do Gorillaz 2 as a Kickstarter. If you guys probably all know what Kickstarter is, but Kickstarter is a thing where you get people to donate money and to help you with whatever project you're working on. So for the Gorillaz 2 book, there are different levels. You can donate $5 and get some stickers, $10 and get a card sketch. $20 get some books, blah, 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 keeps going on. But the best one is if you donate $500, you can get drawn into the book as a U.S. soldier.
That is awesome.
That is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I kind of want to do it just for that.
Yes.
So, yeah, you guys should check out Gorillaz. I think we've got it at all the stores. And, check if you like it.
It's awesome. Definitely check it out.
If you like it, donate to this Gorillaz 2 thing because I want to see this comic get made.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
All right, so let's see what else we got here. Looks like David Goyer is going to adapt 100 Bullets.
Legendary David S. Goyer.
The legendary David S. Goyer. I've got a list of some of David Goyer's amazing credits here on my piece of paper. He wrote Kickboxer 2, The Road Back.
Hell yeah.
Was that a Jean-Claude film?
I think it was based on a J.D. Salinger novel.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, I didn't see that one. He wrote The Crow, City of Angels.
The best one.
Yes. That's the one with Iggy Pop, right?
Is it with Iggy Pop? I know it's not the one that has Edward Furlong and David Boreanaz in it.
No.
That is a thing.
That's a thing. He wrote Dark City, which is good.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
He wrote all the Blade movies.
That's good.
Most of those were good.
But he also wrote Jumper, which is, you know.
Yes.
Partly good.
My favorite. No.
Is that your favorite Hayden Christensen movie?
Yeah, well, probably.
Yeah, I would say
it's probably everybody's favorite Hayden Christensen.
And then, of course, he worked on The Dark Knight and Batman Begins and wrote a movie called Puppet Master versus Demonic Toys, which is, I haven't seen that one, but I'm sure it's amazing.
That was his highest grossing film.
So how do you guys think 100 Bullets is going to translate into a TV show?
It's the one comic I always thought should be a TV show out of all the Vertigo series. People are like, oh, Preacher, you know, that'll be a great... But 100 Bullets is like... made for TV. It's like should I explain the premise? It's basically just, you know, I mean, it's just a guy giving people a briefcase full of bullets, 100 of them, and a gun and some evidence pointing to somebody who's done something wrong to them, and the bullets are untraceable, and he's like, do what you want, and that's pretty good setup for a TV show.
I was gonna say that you shouldn't explain the premise, but you're good job being proactive there.
No, whatever.
It's
pretty basic.
It definitely lends itself to a very, it's very episodic in nature. Right. So I think it would make a good TV show.
And there's a good mythology. It builds up.
Yeah. So David Goyer, not the best guy in the world, but 100 Bullets could be pretty awesome.
Yes. It's on Showtime. So there's a lot of violence and sexiness to 100 Bullets. So.
Right. And Showtime is all about violence and sexiness.
It's true. I watch Big Brother After Dark all the time.
And 100 Bullets, Sandals and Blood or whatever it's going to be called. They've got all those like the Borgias and Camelot. And less good news, I guess. Marvel's putting out a thing called the Kree Skrull War, which is gonna bring back the idea of collecting collectible cards and making comic books out of them.
Wait, what?
That's the new thing, man. It's gonna be huge. It's gonna explode.
They're bringing it back. It's the 90s. They're coming back all over again. We got Polybagged Ultimate Spider-Man. We got comics made out of cards.
We've got tons of variant covers.
Variant covers.
Some Rob Liefeld comics coming out.
Oh, lots of Liefeld.
Rob Liefeld doing Hawk and Dove. This is written by Sean McKeever, which means that it'll probably be well written, but it's a comic book that's in baseball cards.
In card form.
I guess they're not called baseball cards if they don't have baseball players on them.
No. So does each card have like one panel? I don't understand how
that's
it works.
What I was. Exactly. I thought it'd be awesome if you could like make a giant comic by taping up on the wall or something.
Well, I think
I don't know if that's awesome.
I think the idea is that they go in like those like 9 pocket card things. God. You know, you guys have Pokemon cards, right?
No, never.
No.
What? Magic the Gathering?
No.
Nope.
You guys just play Pogs?
No. Oh, like Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
No.
Yeah, like Yu-Gi-Oh cards. Yeah.
I definitely don't play Pogs. No slammers.
So basically, this is just a terrible, terrible idea, I think.
I guess it's just an idea.
I don't even know why I'm talking about it. It's not like we're going to carry them.
Yeah, this is not...
amazing
this is,
as an idea. That
this is not news. Not news.
But that's my number 2 news story. Oh, my number 3 news story. Well, all right. Well, here we go. I guess the big news of the week, if you could call this news, this is just basically... a segue facts. For us to talk trash about the Green Lantern movie. But Green Lantern's opening weekend versus the budget of the movie. Basically, Green Lantern made about $50 million, which put it under X-Men First Class and Thor. But Green Lantern the production budget was $200 million. And then the advertising budget was $125 million. And you guys have seen Green Lantern ads all over every single book.
Yeah,
including Marvel Comics,
including the back cover of Marvel Comics.
Subway avocado power. It's green.
He likes milk too.
So the total budget of the movie was $325 million. So let's talk about where that money went. You guys think it went to the script?
A black hole?
No, it definitely didn't go into the script. Probably went into paying the actors and the crazy amounts of special effects in it.
There are a lot of special effects. I know the guy that's the special effects guy in Green Lantern basically said he had to create. He also worked on Avatar. He had to create 10 times as many aliens for Green Lantern as he did for Avatar in half the time. And it shows.
Most of the background aliens are pretty cool, but there's a few little sketchy parts here and there.
So we all went and saw Green Lantern on Thursday night.
Yes, we were
excited about it.
There's a guy dressed like Green Man, too, which was pretty sweet.
There was a guy dressed like Green Man from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
That was sweet.
I don't know if I feel like he had never actually read a Green Lantern comic or seen It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but he was just like, he knew he was green.
Yeah, he's like, green, I'm in.
Green, I got it, I'm done, let's go to Comic-Con.
I'm watching every movie with the title, with green in the title, right?
So I know Nick's been waiting to talk a lot about Green Lantern and how he felt about it, so what do you want to tell people?
I thought it was a masterpiece.
Now, what do you really want to tell people?
No, a masterpiece of what?
No, it was. I don't know what to say about it. It was good. But not really that good. I really liked Ryan Reynolds in it, and I thought Mark Strong was really good as Sinestro.
He was pretty hilarious.
But he was barely in it, and...
Peter Sarsgaard was good as Hector Hamhead.
Yes. Oh,
Peter Sarsgaard was the best. Skarsgård, right? All right, but he was the best, but kind of was sort of like not necessary to the rest of the story.
It was a very Spider-Man 3 kind of movie where they're jamming like 8 different plots all together and making a... plot.
But not as good as Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, not as good as Spider-Man 3.
I don't know if you didn't like Spider-Man 3. I thought it was okay, but it's definitely not as good as Spider-Man 3.
We were trying to rank the Green Lantern movie among the other comic book movies.
Yeah.
And I think we put it right around Elektra, like pretty much on the same level as Elektra.
Yeah.
Which was
I liked it a little more than Elektra.
I put it that was below Daredevil, but above the Captain America movie from the 80s.
Yeah.
And I guess above Captain America 2, the movie from the 70s.
And Roger Corman's Fantastic Four.
And Roger Corman's Fantastic Four, which if you haven't seen is like something to be seen.
Those are good special effects.
Yes.
Well, I think they blew... on the Fantastic Four movie, they blew the whole budget on the Thing's costume. Like, they got the guy that did the Ninja Turtles costumes from the Ninja Turtles movie.
Wow.
There was a really good Ben Grimm, like, Thing costume in that movie, but that was the only good thing in that movie.
That's why the new Fantastic Four movie didn't cost that much, is because Michael Chiklis didn't even have to wear a costume. So basically we all kind of thought Green Lantern stunk. The story didn't really make a lot of sense. We could talk about it for a long time, but
Lively was the worst.
Blake Lively is a black hole of acting.
He's not lively.
There's so many things wrong
with
him.
She wears a dress occasionally. I think that was her acting ability.
No, I mean, she's hot, but yeah.
Yeah,
the ability to put on clothes is what Blake Lively is.
Yeah.
All right, so that's enough about the Green Lantern movie. So we're going to go into some listener mail. We got our first bit of listener mail this week. Chris Campbell, one of our customers at Big Planet Comics, thanks for sending in a letter. Chris says, hey guys, it's Chris. Listen to the first episodes. We're working late one night. You guys did a great job. And that's all you really need to know from Chris.
Yep. All right.
That's it.
Thanks, Chris. Chris had some questions too. He said, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the upcoming Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles book and your experience with the older material.
I am a Ninja Turtles freak. I used to have Ninja Turtles. Yeah, that's me. I had Ninja Turtles sheets. I had Ninja Turtles coming out of their shells tour on cassette. I think I had the videotape of it too.
The key element is he's trying to put this in the past tense. You should say, I have all these things.
I do. I still have all these things. Yeah. There you
go. I definitely had the soundtrack to the movie on cassette.
Which one? The first?
The first movie. Yeah, not the one with the Vanilla Ice song.
I have both. But yeah, the old series is the best. It's awesome.
Yeah, the original Mirage comics when I was a kid were like some of my favorite Ninja Turtles. I mean, I loved them. I think I had all 60 issues. And so the thing with the new one is basically Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird sold the rights to Ninja Turtles to IDW.
Yep.
But now Kevin Eastman is coming back and actually co-writing and doing layouts on a new Ninja Turtles series.
It's awesome news.
Which is the first time I can think of something like that really happening, where somebody sold the rights to their comic series and then came back to work on it afterward.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. Yeah. It's unheard of.
Yeah, but pretty interesting. I think you know, Peter Laird and Jim Lawson had been working on Ninja Turtles stuff for a long time, but haven't really seen
Tales of the Turtles and stuff.
Yeah.
And Laird wasn't really doing much with it. It was more like he just had his friends doing comics. So
yeah, I'm hoping this will be a good fresh start. I hope it's exactly like the old comics because those are so good.
I think it's going to be. It looks like it's sort of in the mood of the old comics. And then Chris has another question as well, which is a little bit longer. But he says he heard a conversation with Ron Mars about his new creator-owned project, Shinku, from Image. And Ron Mars mentioned in the interview that he was slightly depressed by the fact that a few comic shops didn't know how Image works, which basically is that Image distributes your books, but it's all still creator-owned.
Right.
And he wanted to know, does a shop have an obligation to its customer base to know anything about a book beyond its content? Things like whether it's creator-owned or not. And he wondered how much additional creator-owned product a motivated and informed shop could sell if they promoted the book to their customers at the maximum level possible for that particular store. Which is a good question. I mean, I think that there's definitely something to be said for putting money into creators' pockets and not, you know, lining the pockets of Time Warner or Disney as much. And especially a lot of these guys, they're not as, their hands aren't as tied with their own products that they, you know, their own properties that they've created, which you end up with great stuff like Invincible and Walking Dead and
other Kirkman.
Yeah, the only problem that comes with it sometimes is that, especially for Image, you don't actually get paid until your comic makes money.
Well, I think that's what Chris's point was, that you don't understand that for an Image person, it's not that you're being distributed from Image and they pay you up front. It's often Image will distribute your book and then you get money if it does well.
Like with Gorillaz we were talking about a second ago. It didn't sell very well, so he didn't get to make anymore, and now he has to kind of find another way. But, I mean, on the other side, if your comic does really well, you own it. So Robert Kirkman's doing pretty well right now.
Yeah, and there's a lot to be said. I mean, as a consumer, do you really have an obligation to creators as much, or do you just want to buy things that entertain you? I mean, basically, as a consumer, that's, you know, your level of commitment just depends on really how you feel about your sort of responsibilities as a consumer. And I don't know. I mean, if you want to read Batman books, read Batman books.
Yeah, but I definitely feel like if there's a creator you like, you should read, you know, whatever they write. I mean, even if it's something out of the blue, like Paul Cornell's writing Demon Knights, The Demon in Medieval Times. It's a pretty good one. I mean,
right.
That is a podcast favorite book. Demon Knights.
But I mean, that's the kind of, it's the ethos of like buying local. You know, there are certain styles that, you know, a creator owned project will make, you know, some people it's more appealing to go for that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So buying Image Comics is more like going to, you know, buying organic food as opposed to buying cheese in a can.
But not as lame.
Hopefully.
All right, so yeah, I want to thank Chris for sending it in an email.
Wait. He had another interesting point. It was beyond just the creator-owned thing of like promoting a book. He's like, how much additional like a shop could, if they promoted a book to a maximum level? He's kind of asking like, I think just aside from the creator-owned thing, it's like if we all got together and pushed a book, how could we change the sales on it?
Well, we do that all the time.
Yeah, I think we usually do it.
He was asking how much you do it, and it's like it does make a big difference if a store is behind something.
Yeah, I mean, I think we do it every week. We're doing it right now by making this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it does have an effect. I mean, you know, you create sort of a relationship with your customers, and
You make sure you tell them the truth. If something is not good, like anything that's written by Scott Lobdell, then they shouldn't read it.
We always have to crap all over Scott Lobdell in these podcasts
every time.
It's become a responsibility. But yeah, no, thanks, Chris, for sending in a question. If you guys want to throw a question at us, just send an email to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. And we will read your question on the air.
Sweet.
It's more questions, please.
More questions.
Hit me.
We need one of these every week. If we don't have a listener mail section next week, we're just going to seem like a bunch of jabronis.
I'm just going to make it up.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought you were supposed to write us, Nick. Where's your email?
I am not definitely not Chris week. Campbell. Uh-huh.
All right, so we're going to move on to reviews. The first review of the week, and I guess we're going to try not to spoil this one too much, but Ultimate Spider-Man number 160.
Spider-Man is dead, or is he?
Now, when I read this, I should say this is polybagged, like the death of Superman and like the death of Johnny Storm. People definitely died in both of those comics. So I think you can assume that if a book is polybagged, people are going to die. That's not too much of a spoiler.
Unless it's the 90s.
But there's a new Ultimate Spider-Man series coming out in like a month.
But so, who is Spider-Man?
Is it Peter Parker? I know.
But this book was fun. It was a big action comic, basically. And when I was reading it, I felt like I probably should have read the last 159 issues of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, you should have. Ultimate Spider-Man has been the best for so long.
Good point.
And this issue is no exception. It's really good.
But so you guys liked it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome ending.
There we go. And so next we've got the Metal Hurlant hardcover, which none of us actually read except Jared. So Jared, tell people about that thing.
All right, another Humanoids book. I believe this is mainly short stories from the Metal Hurlant issues that came out like 7 or 8 years ago, back when Humanoids was trying to break in the U.S. market. So it's all short stories, very much in the Twilight Zone vein of, you know, you get to the end and there's some crazy twist ending. But a whole bunch of good people, really, really good art, hardcover, very nice.
One question, how metal was it? Oh, this is two questions. How metal was it, and what's a Hurlant?
A Hurlant, I believe it's technically French for screaming metal or something along those lines.
Sweet.
So this is a Judas Priest comic?
Parts of it, because it's all short stories. There is actually a screaming planet in it, which I believe was a very big theme in a lot of the old Humanoid stuff.
I'll definitely read it. It's got some really good creators on it, right?
Yeah, it does. Jeff Johns is in it for one, which is always a big draw for people that like Green Lantern. Not the movie, but the comic. That's good. Yeah, no, it's got a bunch of good people in it. Cully Hamner's in it, and a bunch of European dudes. There's a story by Rob G and Rick Spears, the guys that did Teenagers from Mars.
Awesome.
So yeah, there's definitely a bunch of good stuff in here.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth checking out. I will recommend it, I guess, even though I haven't read it.
I will recommend it. 50-50. We'll see.
you're gonna wait till you read it. I think that's a wise decision.
Yes.
But Jared read it for sure, and I'm assuming he recommends it.
I do. Like all Humanoids books, it looks very pretty too. So
Yeah, nice those packaging. Those European guys know how to draw.
They sure do.
All right. So another book this week was a Garden, which is a Japanese book that I read a big chunk of and I thought was pretty amazing. It's by Yuichi Yokoyama, the guy that did New Engineering, and he's got another book too, Travel.
And if you haven't read any of those, they're completely insane.
They are completely insane, and Garden is no exception to the this guy writes completely insane books rule.
Well, they said this one actually had a lot more dialogue, so you kind of understood it a little more, because I haven't read the first two that he did. So,
well, I read a good bit of it, and I understood that a lot of insane things were happening.
Yes. Yeah, I could tell you that just by looking at it.
Yeah, and some great sound effects. So my favorite one, they write, Guru Guru is the sound of spinning.
Like sounds about right.
Spinning
top. That's the sound I make when I spin, or at least when I stop and throw up.
Guru Guru.
Yeah, but I mean, this guy, it's hard to explain. It's such a visual book. You just have to see it to. But
it's like weird creatures walking through like M.C. Escher paintings.
Like hundreds of people, like yeah.
Yeah, it's basically if you like manga, and you especially like weirder sort of art manga stuff, it's definitely worth taking a look
at. Want something completely different? This is the book for you this week.
And then we're gonna move on to a couple of books that I didn't read. This seems to be a theme that's emerging in the podcast. Yeah. That Kevin doesn't read any of the books because he's too busy trying to figure out how to make microphones work.
That's why Chris isn't here. You're next. You're next, buddy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. By the way, Chris is not here because he said, and I quote, "I'm just not as interested in this as you guys are."
Also, he's on vacation.
He is on vacation. Right. He's up in the mountains somewhere. So, Mystery Men number 2, which I really liked the first issue, but I didn't get to the second one tonight. What'd you guys think of it?
It was awesome.
As good as the first.
You read it?
Yeah. Give me a little more information than that.
a little more information.
Kind of awesome.
Kind of. Well, Patrick Zercher's art. Is it Zercher or Zercher? I don't know.
I think it's Patrick Zercher. He's the guy that drew Terror Incorporated,
which was great.
Another guy whose name I always mispronounce. It's either David Lapham or David Latham or David Lapham.
It's one of those three.
Jared says it's Lapham. I tend to believe him.
I said Lapham.
Oh, Lapham.
Because it's a PH.
Oh, okay.
And it's now written by, if you haven't read it, it's written by David Liss, the guy who's writing Black Panther right now, which is also awesome.
Yeah, which has been really good since he took over. It was Daredevil and they changed it to Black Panther. Yeah. And David Liss has been doing an awesome job on that. So Mystery Men is basically a pre-World War II pulp comic that seems to take place in the Marvel Universe, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's kind of a mystery surrounding some early superheroes.
Yeah, it feels like a really good noir superhero movie. Like, it's structured like a movie. Like, it seems like the heroes are getting closer and the villains getting more dastardly.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And it reminds me of Marvel's Project a lot, which was another really good series by Brubaker.
Very pulpy, two-fisted action, jetpacks and guys with masks and fedoras. And, it's awesome.
Yeah, but a very cool book. You can kind of get your superhero fix, but then read something a little bit different at the same time. I definitely think it's worth checking out for fans of stuff like Incognito and Criminal, but also for fans of stuff like Brubaker's Captain America or the Marvel's Project.
Or The Rocketeer, which is sweet too.
Or The Rocketeer. Speaking of The Rocketeer,
yes.
Thank you for that. Rocketeer Adventures number 2 came out this week.
It did. It was as good as the first one.
Yeah, the staple. I mean, you guys all know who The Rocketeer is. He's that guy that's in that movie that's directed by the guy that's directing Captain America.
Yep. This is rocketed into my heart. So beautiful.
Stamp that on the cover of issue 3. It was rocketed into Nick's heart. But, so who are the artists in this one? Because the first one had great artists.
For one, Darwin Cook wrote Andrew a story.
Darwin Cook.
Some guy named Chris Weston, Gene Ha. I've heard of some of
those. Wow, really?
Guys.
All those people are in there?
And Jeff Darrow did a 2-page spread, which is just a 2-page spread, but is the Rocketeer flying with 2 submachine guns in his hands shooting down Nazi planes.
And it's Jeff Darrow, so it looks like it took like 5,000 years to draw.
There are a lot of bullets falling out of the sky in that picture.
So are the stories pretty good in the second issue? I mean, the first issue had really good art. The stories were okay.
Yeah.
The stories in this one are actually a lot better than the last one.
Cool.
And the first one's great. The Chris Weston art is good. I'm still waiting for him to finish the 12 at some point with Straczynski, but I don't know if that's ever.
I think that's less Chris Weston's fault and more J. Michael Straczynski's fault.
Yeah. I just want to see more Chris Weston art.
J. Michael Straczynski is not, he doesn't finish anything.
Sometimes.
Or it doesn't finish anything properly, at least.
Oh. Poor Straczynski.
Yeah.
The Darwin Cook thing is also probably one of the best things I read in a really long time.
Pretty much everything Darwin Cook touches is gold. So if you're a fan of anything Darwin Cook, like New Frontier or the Parker books that have come out recently, it's definitely worth picking up.
But yeah, that one's amazing. It's like from Betty is kind of taken over as like the heroine as opposed to the Rocketeer doing everything. And it's amazing.
Yeah. So basically, everybody says Rocketeer is amazing.
Yes.
And now we'll move on to a book that I think is half amazing, which is Dark Horse Presents number 2.
I don't know about half because it's so many short stories. You got to kind of pick and choose them.
Well, that's the half I'm talking about.
You're rounding up or down?
I don't know which one. One of the stories that I really liked was it was more of a series of shorts, but this character called the Wraith, who I think has been around for a while, but it's basically like a parody of Batman, except instead of doing good things, he does really terrible things.
They are amazing. That is probably, it's almost worth buying it just for those storylines.
Not to give too much away, but one of the first things he does is punch a little kid in the face.
Yeah, which is, what Batman does.
Yeah.
He likes when violence is done to little kids. That's part of his character.
Yeah, and Richard Corbin's thing in the back is really weird and creepy, but pretty good so far.
Yeah,
just a rundown of like the amazing people that are in this. Paul Chadwick, who does Concrete. There's a new Concrete story in here. Richard Corbin, who's famous for Den and other stuff in heavy metal. Howard Chaykin. Carlos B. McNeil does new Finder stuff in here. Neil Adams does new stuff. Michael T. Gilbert and David Chelsea, who were both in the first issue. And then there are a couple of new things. One is this Robert Love and David Walker's number 13, which is like this. Did you guys read that?
Yeah.
It was pretty nutty. It's like this post-apocalyptic,
very strange,
yeah, thing. It's really short, so it's kind of an intro, but it's definitely an interesting story.
Oh, and, God, can we talk about the Neil Adams thing?
All right, in what sense?
It's insane.
Well, Neil Adams is kind of known for doing insane stuff recently. I mean, he did that Batman Odyssey, and that is completely insane. So is this on par with that?
This is like the ramblings of a bad man. I don't know what is happening in this.
I couldn't get through it. There are so many like squares of, you know, I don't know, exposition rather than dialogue. But the pictures look crazy.
Yeah, well, Neil Adams is still, he's still a really good artist, but he just should not be writing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's a line like this. The demon bloods succeeded in plunging Earth back into 1,000 years of dark ages, a backward moving of civilization.
Sorry, I fell asleep there for a second.
Well, yeah, but that's not even the craziest.
And that's
stuff
a character speaking as opposed to exposition.
But I think there's enough good stuff in here that it's worth checking
Look
out.
At that page. Look how much text is on this page.
Jared, I got to read one more.
This is a podcast, Jared.
I got to read one more. To become an unsame, to make a change, an impact on history, you must find a path, a way of being that does not follow your preordained way. Only change brings new. How could you possibly learn to step out of your machine?
And that's one word bubble.
I totally zoned out there while you were reading that.
And this is said by a guy standing in front of what looks like ancient Greek architecture. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on either.
No, there's some pyramids and whatever.
Can we stop talking about this? This is really lame.
it's true.
All right, so we're going to move on to one of the big number ones this week, which is Brightest Day Aftermath, The Search for Swamp Thing.
Yep.
Well, that didn't sound
John
good.
John Constantine in the DC Universe and Swamp Thing, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of the big thing that's happening here is John Constantine and Swamp Thing, who are two staples of the Vertigo Universe, have sort of been moved back into the DC Universe where they started. And I thought the issue was interesting. I think the storyline's kind of fun, but John Constantine is maybe the most British person I've ever read in a comic in this. He says bloody 3 times in one panel.
Yeah, they make sure that you know he's British. He's super British in this. Maybe a little too British.
Yeah, people say things like governor and it's a lot. They say bloody a lot. He calls cigarettes fags all the time. And
well, the best thing that I saw is when I was reading something else earlier in the day, and I noticed that in the preview for this exact comic, the first few pages, Chaz has been changed from an old man with a mustache and a goatee to a younger guy with stubble. He looks completely different in the
two. So this is a change. Ah. Basically, there was a preview of this comic that ran in a bunch of the DC books over the last couple months. And so from the time when this preview ran to when this new story ran, Chaz has been changed from a schlubby fat guy into a schlubby skinny guy.
He's not schlubby. No, he's skinnier. He's lost a lot of weight and he's de-aged.
And he shaved off his goatee, it looks like.
He's got some stubble.
How I think he's normally depicted in the regular old Hellblazer comics.
Well, basically, whenever I read Hellblazer comics, I cut out pictures of Shia LaBeouf from my Tiger Beat magazines and I paste them over top of Chaz's head because I don't like to picture him any other way.
Fair enough.
But, you know, the storyline is interesting enough. I don't want to give too much away, but basically Swamp Thing is back at the end of Brightest Day. And he's basically an elemental that's meant to protect the Earth. And he's basically like Poison Ivy.
He's like possibly berserk or going crazy.
He's gone berserk.
He's a killing people.
And then there's an interesting twist at the end. I think if you read Brightest Day, it's definitely worth checking out.
Right.
And I'm kind of intrigued by the idea of these old Vertigo characters coming back into the DC universe. So I think I'll read the next issue.
Yeah, it's only 3 issues, and it's definitely an interesting way to mix them back in. I did not really like Batman's dialogue very much, I will say that.
Yeah, it's a little like, weird. It seems like the writer got really excited to write Batman dialogue, so just wrote like the most Batman-y dialogue he could ever think of.
Yeah. All right, what's next?
Next we've got, unfortunately, at least at our Vienna store where all of us work, we didn't get shipped all of our Flashpoint books this week, but that's neither here nor there. But the one we did get shipped was Flashpoint the Outsider. Can anybody tell me what was going on in this comic?
There's a guy, he's like white, like he kind of looks like Metamorpho or something.
Kind of gray, maybe.
Yeah, and he's got robots and armies of people, and people are trying to kill him. for some reason.
He did show up in the very first Flashpoint, and now it is revealed that he is using some sort of holographic projecting system to appear in the Flashpoint issue, and he's actually off at a base doing sneaky stuff.
Yeah, the whole issue is full of stuff like that. That just was, to me, just I did not find it interesting in the least.
A lot of people died when he was born. Yeah, I thought it was all right.
He's just like a bad guy, and then people get mad at him, and I don't know. It just it didn't really do much for me. The Outsider originally was... back in the, I want to say it was in the 60s, was Alfred Pennyworth.
Oh, yeah. Alfred Pennyworth is mentioned in this. I don't want to say how or why, but it's pretty...
That he's a different character.
It's pretty lame. Yeah. It's pretty lame.
It is pretty lame, yeah. But I don't know. For me, Flashpoint the Outsider is a definite skip.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought that was interesting just because it's very much like the kind of guy behind the scenes manipulating a lot of stuff. And again, very violent.
Yeah, it's a little like books. Super violent for a DC comic, but it's all right. Yeah, well, I guess DC Comics
DC's
has been
kind of up in the ante all the time.
There are definitely some scenes of intense violence.
Yeah.
Yeah, but one was enough for me on that one. I don't think I'm going to read any more of those.
Yeah, I'll probably finish it, maybe. I don't know.
But moving on to a superhero book that I think we all liked is it's a trade paperback of X-Men Second Coming, which was the sequel to Messiah Complex. And
yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, and it was awesome. I mean, the X-Men's been a little up and down the last couple years, I feel like, but these big storylines that have moved through all the books involving Hope, who was the first mutant born after House of M, I think have been really interesting and sort of have like a big sort of action movie feel to them. And I think Second Coming's definitely got that going on for it.
I think the thing about this is they treat it like an action movie where they put good writers but like really dynamic storytelling artists on it who had the big, very often photorealistic art, or not photorealistic, but you know, kind of realistic
gritty art.
And it's got a few different storylines going on, and the way they're told and the way they jump back and forth between them, I think it keeps a lot of inertia going in the book. And it's just like a really fun X-Men comic. I'm not a big X-Men guy, but I actually really enjoyed this.
Yeah, there's big character deaths. There's
a lot of them.
Narrow escapes, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
A lot of bad guys working together. And yeah.
All in all, it's a really fun read, and I definitely would recommend it to any fan of X-Men for sure if you haven't read it yet.
Yeah, definitely. For sure.
Yeah. And then that brings us to our Big Planet pick of the week.
Whoa.
The Gingerbread Girl soft cover. So, Jared, since you're so eager to talk about it, why don't you do it? We're going to turn off our mics and go drink a beer.
All right, cool. All right, while those guys are gone, let me tell you. New top shelf book, the art's by Colleen Coover, who is infamous for being a very talented artist, I suppose.
Yeah, she did Banana Sundays, yep. Which was
a kid's comic.
Why is
she infamous for being a really good artist?
That too.
She evil?
No, but basically Colleen Coover, she did Banana Sundays, which was a kid's comic. And then
a bunch of talking monkeys.
And then she did, what was the other one called? The porn comic that she did.
Oh, I can't even remember the title now.
Is it like Small Changes or something like that?
Small Favors. Yes.
Which is, you know, it's a porn comic, but it's actually really good.
But yeah, it's like she does like super cutesy art, and this is perfect for this book, which is very strange.
Yeah, you might have noticed her. She's done some backups and a lot of Marvel stuff lately, and they've all been actually really good. But this is...
And so this is drawn by her and written by Paul Tobin, who's her husband.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
He writes a lot of Marvel comics, too. He writes a lot of the Marvel Adventures comics.
And he wrote Spider-Girl, the new Spider-Girl series, which was actually really good.
Yeah.
So what'd you guys think of it? Or tell people what the plot was.
Wow.
Well, it's pretty simple. It's about...
is it?
It's mostly just about this this one girl, and it's... her story is told through the point of view of random bystanders, including like a magician and a pigeon and a bulldog and a random guy who's robbing a store.
Yeah, passersby, herself, her girlfriend, her boyfriend.
And the crux of her character is basically she thinks that she has a sister that was separated from her that is her homunculus who has... It's a really strange book, but basically this sister, which we don't know whether she's real or not, carries with her all of her emotions and all of her ability to feel, whether it's to feel pain or to feel love.
Yeah, so you're not sure if she actually, if this is real crazy sci-fi stuff or that she's just trying to bury her emotions. And this is basically everybody talking about it, and it's her going out on a date one night.
Yeah, and the book, I think, had a few missteps. I mean, I thought that the multiple narrators, while cute, were kind of muddied the narrative a little bit from time to time. It goes off on tangents that are like very whimsical, but sort of don't really get to the core of what the book is about. But overall, I mean, there's so much going on in the book that I think it's so interesting that it's definitely worth reading.
I think also the voices kind of add to it. Like, you're not sure if she's crazy, so maybe she's hearing all these people talk. So that's true. Like, that's adds a little bit to that. But the one thing I didn't like, which I can't really talk about too much, but the way it ended was a little sudden for me. I can't really say what happens, but yeah. I wasn't too pleased with the ending.
Yeah, well, you're sort of left to your own devices a little bit to decide.
But I still loved it, though. Like, I thought a lot of it was really, really good.
Yeah, I thought some of the viewpoints they followed were just hilarious or very interesting or very different.
Yeah, there's a bulldog who's pretty funny. I think my favorite was the pigeon who's in the middle of telling the story and then sees some breadcrumbs and just can't resist and has to go do that.
And one of them's a shiesty magician. It's like, everything I do is fake, but I tell people that I read their minds and stuff. And
yeah, he's a very Doctor Strange-y kind of character.
Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, that's our Planet Pick of the Week, and
it was amazing.
Yeah, it's an amazing book. It's definitely worth checking out. And that's pretty much it for our third Big Planet podcast. So we'll see you guys next week.
Every now, yeah.
See you later.